You're listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information about Vineyard Milwaukee Church, visit vineyardmilwaukee.com. Now here's this week's message.
So how's everyone doing? Have you enjoyed this series of wellness? Yeah, been good? Good. I'm glad to hear that. My name's Dave. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm going to talk to you about wellness today. And I don't know about for you, but so like last week I talked about physical wellness, and I got sick. So that stunk. And then like the week before, we talked about financial wellness, and like I got a bunch of parking tickets. So like I'm glad it's going good for you, because for me, like I feel like everything. So I was trying to be a little bit proactive a little bit this week, because this week I'm going to talk about relational wellness. And so I already started making some amends to some broken relationships this week so they don't fall apart this week. That's sort of my mindset. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get proactive. I'm going to start doing things before the talk to hopefully it helps out. But I'm glad it's working out for you. So today we're going to talk about relationships. And I don't know if you're under a rock and you're not on social media at all or on the news. Last week there was an awful tragedy with Kobe Bryant and his daughter and a number of other people, a total of 9 people who were in a helicopter crash. And it was devastating for a lot of people. A lot of people are huge fans of Kobe. And if you're not a basketball fan, Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal were once teammates. And they played for the Los Angeles Lakers. And they were amazing. They were this dynamic duo that could be like nobody else on the court. They won 3 consecutive championships in 2000, 2001, 2002, which is unbelievable. And everyone thought this is going to be the dynasty of all dynasties. And the issue was they actually really struggled in their relationship. They didn't like each other. Like they had ego issues. They had, you know, who's going to make more money, me or Kobe or whatever, they go back and forth. And they actually would never confront and have those conversations face to face. They would have them either through people or through the media or things like that. And they didn't get along. But they were amazing. I mean, they were making tons of money. They were super successful on the court. But then as soon as the game was over, like, you didn't pass me the ball enough. You know, I'm supposed to be the superstar, not you. And they would say that through, like, other teammates. And they really struggled in their relationship. So much so that instead of talking it out, they actually had to part ways. And management was involved. And it was like if you were around at all in basketball in the middle of the 2000s, like that was like a big story, like the beef between Kobe and Shaq, you know. And now, so they had to split ways. So Shaquille O'Neal went to Miami and he won a national championship. And then and then you had Kobe stayed and he won 2 more. You know, he let Shaq know, hey, I won 2 more than you, you know. It was constantly a battle back and forth. And they couldn't stay on the same team. There could only be one. And their relationship was really severed. And people often would say, "But you know, oh, if they would have stayed together, the Lakers would have won 10 championships easy, right?" But they couldn't stay together. Now, they both retired. And eventually, actually, there was some healing in their relationship. They still had the rifts back and forth, you know, who's better. You know, I had to go get, you had one more championship than I did and all that. And there was still competition. But there was some healing that took place in the relationship. And then we had this awful tragedy take place. Where 9 people lost their lives. And friends and families were totally affected. And Shaquille O'Neal was actually, he said he didn't know what was going on, and he had like 100 phone calls that he missed and text messages, and one of his family members actually broke the news to him, and he didn't want to believe it, but he didn't respond publicly for a really long time, and until he actually did a public talk about like what's going on, how he's feeling in front of his panel. He's now an announcer. And he's with his crew every single week, you know, his kind of like game day crew. And he, for the first time publicly, is sharing some of the stuff that he's dealing with and how it rocked him. And one of the things that he said is that he really wished he could have invested more in his friendship with Kobe. He really wished he would have invested more. And then what struck me is sort of this golden nugget, like he totally broke down in front of his coworkers, his crew, and he says, we need to talk to each other more. And I thought that was a really powerful moment. Like, we need to value our relationships more. And you can see it just all hit him right in that one moment. And so today we're going to focus on relationships. And before we do that, I'm just going to open us up in prayer. And we're going to dive into the book of Colossians today. So Heavenly Father, we just thank you that that you've invented these relationships, that you're part of the creative fabric of relationships. And I just pray that you would put power on these words, that they would be relevant, that they would be words that we need to hear today. We ask this in your name, Jesus. Amen. So Paul wrote the book of Colossians, actually a letter, and he wrote it, and when he wrote it, he writes really about practical matters. And Paul addresses, typically, when he writes a letter, he's talking about relationships. And that's what he's going to talk about here. In fact, I'm going to read the section of this passage to you, and it's kind of a lengthy one. So if you want, like, feel free to like just close your eyes and listen if you want. If you want to look at the words on the screen, you can do that too. But just kind of absorb this letter as he talks about relationships. It's Colossians 3, 1 through 17. Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourself of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge and the image of its creator. There is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of the one body, you were called to peace. And be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through the psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So the reason Paul wrote this letter to the church of Colossae was that they had been becoming under the influence of certain teachings, Gnosticism. And basically what that meant was that the teachings of Gnosticism sort of de-emphasized the importance of your physical bodies, and what we do to them. They also were under the influence that they sort of denied the humanity of Christ and emphasized the importance of this sort of secret esoteric knowledge, this secret knowledge of faith, that Christ claimed that it was this secret knowledge that somehow was necessary to your salvation. And so the church of Colossae was sort of falling into this teaching, this false teaching. And so the early chapters of Colossians, which we're not going to have time to unpack today, but what they were doing is he was really detailing out, he's focused on this absolute supremacy and sufficiency of Jesus, that Jesus is enough. Not all this other stuff, it's just Jesus. So the early part of this letter, that's what he's really focusing on. He's focusing on just Jesus. And as we look today primarily at Colossians 3, we're going to pick up that Paul's central focus in the beginning of this part is Jesus. Jesus is at the center of the world and the universe that we are in as this like all-sufficient reference point for our lives that we're called to live for God. Now, for Paul, the only way we can understand anything properly is that Jesus is the center. Jesus must be at the center or the whole sort of wheel wobbles off, right? It just doesn't work if Jesus is not the center. So for Paul, to be relationally well, we must fit into God's plan for sort of this relational wellness, okay? So imagine this. It's kind of like there's 3 points to this. Paul begins outlining the first point in chapter 3, and it's that Jesus is the center. For Paul, we have to keep in view not only ourselves, but our outside reference points if we're going to find ourselves relationally well and moving towards that. So imagine if like it's like if you know anything about surveying or like, I don't know anything about trigonometry, but I know it's in there. But you have in order to know where you are, you need to have reference points, right? Right? Okay. So there, you need to have like 3 points is what we're trying to say right now. You need to know 2 known outside reference points other than yourself, and you can't figure out where you are yourself if you can't figure out where those points are. Does that make sense so far? Some of you are like, I'm lost. We're talking about math. And he said, as soon as he said trigonometry, I'm out, right? But the idea is that if you're only one point, you're sort of floating around in time and space. You don't know where you are, who you are. You're just by yourself, right? You need other outside things to tell us where we are. So if I have myself, and then what Paul's trying to say is if I have Christ, that's a reference point. And then if I have others, that's another reference point. I really have an idea of where I am, okay? And so that's what we're going to kind of break apart today. But it starts first, we have to pay attention to Jesus. We must pay close attention to Jesus. Jesus is the center, okay? So Colossians 3, 1 through 4 says this, "Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory." The question is, you know, the question for today is, it's really easy to say that, right? It's really easy to say that Christ is the center, but like, how does that actually play out? Like, how does that actually look in real life? How do I actually put Jesus first? It's easy to say that, but how do we actually, in practical terms, actually walk that out? What does it look like in our everyday lives? So in 15 and 16, verse 15 and 16, Paul says this. He says, "Let the peace of Christ rule. Now, actually, in the original Greek, you could actually translate that if you wanted to like referee in your hearts, since as a member of one body, you were called to peace and be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish." I can't say that word today. Admonish. Thank you. I said it wrong earlier and it just didn't sound right. And it's not right. So thank you. Admonish. Thank you. "One another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in our hearts." Now the word literally that I translate, that referee word, right? It's actually, if you looked up, it really is, often in your Bible it'll say like judge or ruler, depending on what translation you're looking at. But you probably find in the version, very simply, that like Christ is a ruler of your heart or serves as a judge in your heart. And the language actually, when you translate it, actually is, he's really looking more of a sports analogy in terms of referee. I said a few weeks ago that Paul loves to use sports analogies. And so he's actually really translating this idea of a referee. So in the Greek, you could actually say it's more of an athletic competition. So referee works. And so the word referee is actually a very appropriate word for what we're going to talk about today, because Christ is kind of like the referee. He's kind of like the referee. The Bible is kind of like the rule book. You've got the referee, you've got the rule book, you have the peace of Christ and the word of Christ. Now, I don't know about you, but you probably are sitting there going, referee, like, they're bad. Like, many of you Green Bay Packer fans go, no, referee's a bad analogy to use for Jesus. And let me just break this down for you just really quickly. That I imagine, like, I don't know about you if you ever spent any time with youth sports, but my little guy Ben is playing youth basketball. And we have this wonderful referee. He's amazing. He's patient. He's kind. He's teaching kids left and right while he's out there. He's like having a teacher coach on the court at the same time and refereeing at the same time. He's amazing. He's super patient. He's encouraging. That's the kind of referee that I picture Jesus. And some of us actually need that kind of referee. Some of us may be in a different referee, but that's the kind of referee I think most of us need. Most of us need that. You know, for some of us, for some of us, actually, we never even thought about that before. You know, some of us never thought, like, how Jesus fits in that. Like, some of us never thought, like, Jesus as a center point of my life or as a referee in my life, like, guiding me, teaching me, being part of everything that I'm doing on the court, right, or on in your life. And so for some of you, that's a really new concept. Now, for me, you know, I often forget that Jesus is the center. No one here does that. I know, this is just me. But I have this issue sometime of I'll raise my voice in certain conversations with certain people. And I have sort of this issue where I'll get a little louder. I know, you're all very, very surprised. But I will get louder, and it doesn't matter if I'm, you know, it's typically like I'm not being heard, or I'm not being validated or valued, or I'm feeling defensive, and I figure the louder I get, the quieter everyone else goes, and then it goes away. So that's like my thing, and usually it's in that time that I forget that Jesus is the center of my life, and it's more about Dave and all those other things that I said. Anyone relate? No? Of course not. You guys are awesome. So that's where it hits me. And what I often have to do is I have to stop and go, wait a minute. Jesus is the center. He is my referee. He is guiding me. He is teaching me. Like, he has a bigger role in my life than just sort of this thought. And I have to stop and I have to say, Jesus, how should I be showing up right now? Like, is this how you would show up? Is this how you created me to be? I had to first pay attention to Jesus, to his word and his peace. I have to first go there. I have to go first to that point, that reference point. I also have to pay attention to myself, right? For it's true that to be relationally well, we must also pay close attention to ourselves. We must pay close attention to ourselves. And in Colossians 3, 5 through 8, Paul talks about this, and he's talking to us. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourself of all the things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Paul calls us basically to be executioners. I don't know about any of you, but that scares me a little bit, right? We have to put the remnants of our former life to death. We have to kill our immorality. We have to say our uncleanness of spirit, our reckless passions, evil desires, greed, all of it has to go, right? But in order to put them to death, we actually have to know that they're there. So it causes a little self-awareness, right? You ever do that? Like, oh, no, he's not talking about me. That's not me. No, it may be. Like, there is something about being self-aware of what you're doing, that you have these things in. You have reckless passions. You have evil desires. You have greed. For some of us, we live life and we just think everything's fine and we don't look inward ever. We don't look inward ever. We go about our daily life and we just pack it with events. We pack it with different projects, with work, and we don't stop and go, wait a minute, what have I actually, have I killed off some of those things? Have I? I'm not even aware that they're there. Putting to death does not sound fun, by the way, and it's not. It's not. It's really hard. Some of you are actually, and we did this thing in the fall called faith walking. We did faith walking 101 retreat, and it really is, it's awesome and painful, where you take some time and you look inward. And some of you are in faith walking 201 right now, and you're going even deeper. And I know it's really, really hard work, but it's really, really good work. And Paul says that we actually need to be aware of these things, to pay attention to them, and that whenever we find that we are to strip them off like old garments, he says, as though they're burning clothes, that we can't remove them fast enough, and we need to put something on instead. For me, and I have permission to share this story. I sometimes will get in an argument with Caleb, my son, and you know, we are both can be very passionate people. And when I feel that my voice is starting to boil up inside of me, he sometimes has the same thing. And I'm aware that something's not right in me when that happens. I recognize it. It's taken a while for me to get there, but I recognize it now. And that I now can create a little time and space to sort of strip off those old garments before I put them on even. I can put them down before I put them on. You know, as it's coming, I feel boiling. It's in my hand. I'm going to put it on. No, wait a minute. How do I want to show up, Lord? Wait, I need to take some time. And I'm able to drop them before I put them on. This takes work. Some days, if you're looking for me, you can just follow the path of the old garments and you'll find me. You know, I'm going to drop them left and right. But, you know, God may be calling each of you to do something similar, right, on a regular basis in your own life. What are some of these behaviors that I have that are damaging my relationships? What are some of the behaviors that are hurting relationships that I have? Have you asked Jesus? He's the center. Have you asked Jesus what they are? God loves us, and it's part of his love to show us what injures us and injures the relationships of our lives. But it also, it is also the case that to be relationally well, we must finally pay close attention to ourselves and to others. We have to pay attention to others too. In Colossians 3, 9 through 14, Paul then talks about this. He talks about other relationships. First he talked about Jesus. Then he talked about us looking at ourselves. And now he's talking about others. And it says this: do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has any grievances against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. What's interesting is Paul, in this sort of relationship idea, he addresses the relationships within the church first. He addresses those relationships before he addresses family, work relationships, and other relationships. He first tackles actually the people who are actually calling themselves apprentices of Jesus, that call themselves the church. That's who he goes at first. And somehow in God's economy, the relationship that we have in the core spiritual community that is the church is absolutely foundational. Okay? It's essential. Our relationship with the core community, this group that we're here with right now, that is essential. It is crucial. If we're going to find ourselves growing in our relationship wellness now, then this has to work before we go out there, right, into others. I'm going to walk with these people to do hard work of growing as a disciple of Jesus, and that's what we do, church. Church, if we can't figure out how to live well together in our relationships with each other, it's going to be really, really hard and damaging even for us to live out, try to live out healthy relationships from outside, where people don't have necessarily Jesus as their center. However, paying attention to relationships is not one size fits all. That's the way that God is calling me to love, actually. The way I interact with Caleb is going to be different than the way that I interact with my wife, Rebecca, who's going to be different than the way that I interact with Hannah or John. It's not one size fits all. So everyone's going to be a little different. And so I come back to my example with Caleb, and we argue, and I get louder, and he gets louder, and I get louder, and he gets louder. And what's funny is, talking about being self-aware, I'm not even aware I'm getting louder. My whole family was like, you are getting very intense. And I'm like, you haven't even seen intense yet. Like, I'm not even halfway there, you know? And for a long time, I wasn't even aware of the intensity of my voice. So with some healing and some self-awareness, I started to be aware. But there was this one time, we kept getting louder and louder. And often it ends the same way. That's it, I'm done. And we storm off. And it's bad, right? And there's a number of different ways it could go from there, right? We just ignore it, move on. Everything will work out in the end. But I was trying to work on some stuff. I was trying to look at this triangle a little bit, you know, looking at what Jesus, how he created me to show up, who I am, what's going on in me. And I remember I went up and I went to apologize because I realized that I was getting a little loud. I think someone's trying to get in, but they're not pulling the door hard enough. There we go. All right. I was getting a little loud. And so, rather than take time and space, I can't remember. I might have taken a little time and space. I did. I took some time and space to reflect. And then I thought, I'm going to go up and I'm going to apologize for being loud. I'm like, I'm going to clean up my mess. It's a little faith walking term that we talk about a lot. Clean up my mess. So I walk up and I say, listen, I'm really sorry. I got loud. I'm working on some things, you know, accept my apology. And he sort of did, but he had this line that he said to me that kind of undid me. He said, yeah, whatever, like wash, rinse, and repeat. And I was like, oh, no, he didn't. Right? Wash, rinse, and repeat. Did I say it right? Did I get it right? Yeah. I was like, here I am apologizing, trying to work on stuff, and he hit me with this line, and I was undone. I was like, all right, Lord, like, I need time and space now, you know, just like running downstairs. I'm like, oh, I'm ticked off, you know, I'm like, I'm pacing, I'm going outside. I was like, come on, man, I'm trying to work on this. And what I realized is I didn't pay attention to that others, you know, that third reference point, to Caleb. Like, how did my actions impact him? What was the impact? What was the impact? I didn't pay attention to the impact. How my words, my actions impacted him and his world. I didn't use him as a reference point. You know, he was able to express how my actions affected him when I went back. Because I went back and I asked the impact question. I said, listen, I'm really trying to work on this. Like, I get that this is an issue I have. I need to understand how this impacts you and how you want to show up when I do this. And then I had to sit and I had to listen to it. I had to really listen to it. And then what comes out of that is the real apology. Because you understand the impact that you just hit that person with. Before, it was just words. But there's so much more when you use others as a reference point to who we are, right? Everyone's different. They have different experiences, different emotional makeups, different inclinations, loves. They're different people, and we have to approach people differently. This means that we actually need to listen to pay attention to other people. We have to be present with people and understand our impact in that moment. Relationships are not looking out for number one, agree to disagree, a way for me to achieve or climb a ladder. Relational wellness looks more like that triangle where I have Jesus as a center point. I have me and I have others. There's three relationships going on. If that analogy doesn't work for you, I often use this one a lot, and you probably have heard me say this a lot, is that, you know, you have yourself, and then you have sort of a relationship that is horizontal with others, right? And then I have one that's vertical with God, right? And I need them both. I need them both to figure out where I am. I need them both, horizontal, vertical, and me. And if that's the framework that we're talking about in terms of wellness and relationships, let's look real quickly in practical terms, since that's our framework about relationships. We're going to spend a few minutes on how we become relationally well within that framework. And there's just three things I just want to highlight in closing. Is first, that relational wellness requires perseverance. Intimacy is not instant. Authentic relationship is not automatic. Real relationship requires resolve, it costs, and it takes time. I think so often we quit way too quickly, right? Because it can be easy. I'll just let it go. I'll pretend like it doesn't happen. We'll just go through the motions. We can do that. And we might come back, right? We quit too easy. Quit too easy. We've got to do the hard work. It takes perseverance. And second, relational wellness requires truth. You know, this is another thing that we need to actually work at. You don't lie to one another. There's nothing that undermines a relationship and the wellness of that relationship more than a lie. You share real things about your life. And just be real honest, true conversations with other people before God is one of the most sacred and beautiful and significant things we can do, is to be open and honest with each other. It's hard. I know I'm seeing some faces like, I don't know. It's true, though. It's true. When Jesus is the center and you look at yourself and you're open and honest, those are real relationships. Those are real relationships. If you can't be honest, what's really going on there? There's something that you've put on a garment that you were supposed to kill, right? You put on something else. You're not being true to who you are, who you're created to be, right? The third thing is this. Relational wellness requires your presence. It requires you to be present. And that's something I've had to work on a lot. It means putting down your phone, closing your laptop, and being fully present with that conversation, with that relationship. Now I get it. There are times when we're pulling things out and we're, you know, doing things, and I know I'm old. I know the younger generation, they can like look at their phone and talk at the same time, I'm told. You know, but there is something about putting down distraction and being fully present in a relationship. And I will say this, like for me, like sometimes, Rebecca and I will go on date night or whatever, and sometimes I'll say something that'll trigger a memory where she needs to text someone real quick. And she's a slow texter. She's one of these like one finger like texting people, and it just it takes forever. And so I'll often be like, can you put down the phone, please? Like, let's be present. Like it, and I will say when she does that, like how I feel, like the impact of her going, oh yeah, I'm sorry, and putting that phone away. The impact is a really good one. It's a really good one that I'm worth being fully present to. Like this relationship is so much more than anything going on outside right now. And so to be present is how we want to step into relational wellness. Why don't we stand? We're going to have a time of worship and prayer and also, if you're a follower of Jesus, we have an open communion table here that during worship, if you want to slip in the back and get the communion elements, you can come back to your seat however you see fit and engage God in communion. But there's a few things I thought I just want to sort of highlight for you that may be stirring up in you that we could pray about today. For one, there may be someone in this room I felt like that you haven't even really considered Jesus as sort of your center. Like, you've done some work on yourself, you've started paying attention to others and things like that, but you're like, you know what, I haven't added Jesus to that equation, like really. Like, I've talked about it, yeah, whatever. Like, really invite him in to that relationship wellness arena. Like, try it on. And if that's you, like I would love for you to. We got a couple, Mark and Carol and Yami and some others that will be back there to pray. Like, I would love for you to just invite Jesus into that relationship triangle with you. The other thing is, I feel like as I was praying this morning, even about that, some of you have given up on some relationships. And I have to tell you, this was a really hard talk for me to do. I wasn't going to share it, but the truth is, like, this is hard for me. I have some relationships that are pretty broken. And this stirred some stuff up in me. I have a brother that I haven't talked to for a very long time, who's in another country. And this stirred something in me where we started actually communicating through texting and things like that this week. The magic's not there yet. Like, we haven't. It's not there yet. But it's a step. It's a step. And as I prayed this morning, I really felt like some of you are like, you know what? I've got some of those relationships, and I haven't taken a step, not even one. And I feel like God just wants to tell you, hey, I just want to pour courage into you and let you know that I'm going to be with you in that step. And so if there's someone in mind, like right away, you're like, that name popped in your head. That person just popped in your head. As soon as I said that, broken relationship, yeah, you knew who it was. Like, that's actually God telling you, like, who it is. He's like, he's in that. He's telling you that, who that person was. And that means you should get prayer today. If you got a name that popped in your head when I said that, get prayer today for that person and for the courage and that step, whatever that may look like. Conversation, a text, whatever, like, ask God to enter into that first step. So if that's you, I'd love for you to get prayer. And then the other thing that sort of came to me is that there's this line in the talk today where what injures us and injures the relationships of our lives. That line really stood out to me today, that there may be some of you that haven't done that inward work and looked at what injures you in relationships and what injures the relationships of your sort of walk, your daily walk, your life. What are the injuries on yourself that you haven't really dealt with and you haven't allowed God to come in and heal some of that? And what would be next steps for that? So if that speaks to you too, I'd love for you to get prayer. That's a really important thing here. Like, that's really part of our transformation, is actually allowing Jesus to speak into the things that we're talking about. So when we say we're going for prayer, that's what we're doing. We're inviting Jesus into those things. And it's why we're here. It's why worship's great, fellowship's great, the social justice stuff we do is great, and I hope you all stay for that meeting after. But like, the prayer, that's how transformation begins. Allow God to step into those things. All right, church? Let's worship.